Well, I'm super excited to introduce my next guest. My next guest almost doesn't need an introduction. His name is Jim McCann. He is the founder and chairman of 1-800-Flowers. And Jim has such an interesting story. He started out actually with a career in social services. And then I, you know, learned some of this just by reading his book, is he was actually being a bartender to help to support his family. And through that, he came across the opportunity to buy a business, and he knew he wanted to buy a business. And the business he happened to come across the opportunity to buy was a flower business. And from there, I think the rest is somewhat history of now we have 1-800-Flowers. And I personally was privileged to connect with Jim through the Entrepreneurs Organization, where I'm a member. And one thing led to another, and he invited me to be on his connectivity council, which is three people. I think we're all psychologists, and you know, he gives us the chance to share some thoughts that we have with him. And so today I got to turn the tables on Jim and ask him to share some thoughts with me. And I was so privileged to have this conversation, and I really mean that. And I hope that you enjoy the conversation, and I'm certainly looking forward to it. So without further ado, here is Jim McCann, the founder and chairman of 1-800-Flowers. Jim, it is so great to see you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join with me here today.
How have you been?
I've been very well. How was your Father's Day?
Only perfect.
I bet. Would you mind sharing a little bit about it?
Sure. I have three kids and 6.5 grandkids. And we have a beach house out east on Long Island, and everybody was there yesterday, and everybody chipped in and cooked. And my granddaughter, who's 12, led the way with leading several of the other grandkids and baking a cake for last night and decorating it with M&Ms, and it was delicious. And so it was a perfect day. Everyone around the house, in and out of the pool. There's only one fight that was among dogs.
All right. Sounds perfect. So I loved the article actually that you shared on LinkedIn about fathers. And I know one of the things that's been on your mind is fathers and their involvement post pandemic, that of course, during the lockdowns, fathers were home and involved more. And you have been thinking about how that might carry over potentially post-pandemic. Is that true?
Well, we've been looking, Dr. Chloe, at the impact of this enormous event called the pandemic, COVID pandemic, and its impact on so many things. And once you have a big shake like that, there's logically and predictably going to be a lot of different aftershocks. So maybe it's a coping mechanism. But my team and I here at Flowers have been looking at, you know, what are the different possibilities in terms of the short term and long term changes in how we do things, view things, and what behaviors change short and long term. And one that we were focused on leading up to this past weekend, Father's Day weekend, was what impact does it have on the role of fathers? And, you know, the COVID experience has been very, very bad for a lot of people. Obviously, a lot of people got sick. At this point, more than 600,000 people in this country alone lost their lives. And average number of people they leave behind is 9. So 9 times 600,000 is an awful lot of people who are hurting and grieving. But then on the other side of it, you know, to be analytical about it, not all of the impact has been as devastating and painful as it has been on the obvious and so many. And one of the benefits of those people who could continue to work, but work remotely, it's had a profound change on their lives. And one of the changes logically would be if they're fortunate enough to have children, they saw a lot more of their children in the last year and a half than they previously would have without the impact of the pandemic. So what changes does that have? And what changes does it have in terms of, let's look at those fortunate families that have two parents in place and generally a healthy situation, the income to support themselves. And while that's not everybody, it's a lot of people. And we see it in our lives every day. And it causes us to wonder, how will roles change going forward? As employers, we have to anticipate, how do we get people back into a more normal flow in the workplace? And the word that the two phrases that we're gonna that will survive the pandemic will be you're still on mute, and the other is hybrid. Everything's going to be hybrid in some way or another. So it's interesting for us to try and look and imagine and guess as to what the changes would be. And because we just went through Mother's Day, which is a quite important holiday for us as a floral and gift company, and Father's Day, we started saying, okay, beyond the obvious, what changes might come here? And we've been asking those questions. So let me turn it to you. You're the professional. You're someone we turn to get insights and to develop a point of view around how we as a community can help one another. How do you see the role of dads changing as a result of this experience we've all collectively had?
Well, yeah, Jim, I mean, that's such an interesting question. And, you know, it has been such an honor to be on your Connectivity Council. And I'm not surprised that you are thinking in such a reflective way about this. I think something, you know, people don't necessarily know about you is that you were a social worker before you became a business tycoon, right? And so, you know, just that level of reflection and emotional intelligence and family thinking that you bring to the table is incredible. And, you know, I'll answer your question about, you know, just my thoughts about that subject, but I have so many other questions for you too, Jim. I'm so excited for the chance to ask you questions, but my quick thoughts on that, you know, are that I know that even for me as a mom, the pandemic offered me a whole new perspective. It pulled the plug on a lot of my, you know, running around activities. And honestly, it was a blessing in disguise for me. As you said, it was a tragedy in many ways for many people. This is a separate comment, of course, you know, from that. But just for me and my personal life, as a very career-driven person, having permission to stay home has changed me. I've stopped taking new individual clients largely. And my husband as well, obviously, you know, his running around, everything changed. And it's been wonderful to have him at home and to discover, thanks to technology, you know, the things that we can do. I would love to ask you though as well, Jim, you know, yourself as a father, what that was like for you, you know, building a business in those early years. Because one of the things that I think sometimes dads actually get a bad rap on is that, you know, dads are oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes are the providers in their family. And so then when the dad is at work, you know, working and providing for the family, somehow doesn't always get counted as childcare or contributing into the home and supporting the family. And so one of the things I'm often, you know, times trying to help families and fathers and mothers and everybody understand is, you know, that when dad is at work and at the office, you know, he's not on a fantasy football game, you know, he's working to help out the family. So I'm curious, Jim, when your three wonderful children were young, do you mind sharing about that from your perspective?
Well, I'll give you some insight. It was a conversation I had with one of my kids yesterday. We started our business early, and yes, my first career was in the social services. I worked at and then ran a home for teenage boys, and it was a wonderful and educational experience for me. And I didn't come from means, but I knew I wanted to provide a good living for my wife and kids. So I was always doing things. So wasn't smarter than anybody else, but willing to work longer and harder than most anybody else. And in the early years, when we started our flower shop, when I say full-time, it was a 7-day-a-week commitment. Our shop and shops were open long hours, 7 days a week. and it was hard to expect them to run without being there. And so my wife and I tried to work together in the very beginning in the business, but we started a family very young. And so we decided early on, that's not going to work. You take care of the kids, you take care of the house, you take care of the family, and that'll free me up to be a crazy person in terms of work. And I do have some guilt around the fact that I don't think I was there enough for the kids in their earliest years because I was just out and working all the time. My son told me yesterday that he's heard me say that before, and he disagrees. He said, I felt like you were there. I didn't ever have a sense that you weren't there enough. The good news is our office and our shops were quite close to where I live, so I'd be in and out. So I could make it to a ball game, or at least some part of a ball game for the kids. And they expected the big holidays that I wasn't going to be there. It just wasn't home at all. But I have a sense of guilt about it, Dr. Chloe, but my kids tell me that they don't have the same sense and recollection. But what I do really appreciate and respect is that each of my kids, I think, is a very, very good parent. And their spouses, the partners they selected for life, are all very good parents too. And to see that yesterday with the six of them running around there yesterday, my wife and I talked about it last night when they left, that just filled with pride that they're still nearby. We're blessed. How blessed are we? That they keep moving closer. So maybe there's a high premium on quality babysitting services. But when I think of the earliest years, I think of my kids are better parents than I was. And they're much more involved and around in their kids' life than I was. And I think that's terrific.
Right. I mean, but I have to say, though, I hope that I don't want you to carry around that burden of guilt, because your kids, you know, in contrast to you, because you shared that you didn't come from means, you know, your kids are growing up and being parents in the context of having a parent who's already created significant security for the family, right? And so, you know, I just hope that you don't carry, I don't want to go down a sidebar and I don't mean to get too personal, but I hope that you don't carry around, you know, much guilt really, because all of those things that you were doing were actually to build and create security, you know, for your family. And, you know, to that point, I know another one of the things you did, and, you know, kind of getting into another question I have for you, is you created jobs, not only for many Americans, but also for your own family. And I know, you know, one of, you know, even your brother now is the CEO, and another brother that had, you know, if I'm correctly phrasing it, he has some significant developmental disabilities, and he wasn't able to, you know, just cognitively wasn't going to be able to, you know, live independently like the rest of your siblings. But nevertheless, you were able to recognize an opportunity and create a foundation where he and many of his peers contribute to wholesale growing of flowers for 1-800 Flowers. And so you've created a lot of jobs, you know, within even for your own family. And I know you have a great rule that people have to have a job somewhere else before they can work for 1-800 Flowers, that your family members must have another job somewhere else, which is great. But I'm wondering also if you can share, you know, A lot of my listeners in my audience, we love business. I love business. We love families. I love families. One of the struggles that people in family businesses often run into, you know, is issues of entitlement or, you know, personality differences. And I'm wondering if you can share some words of wisdom for those family businesses out there that want to have a happy story like Jim McCann's.
Well, let me break that down. You machine gunned me there with a bunch.
I'm sorry.
This is why I so enjoy our conversations, Dr. Chloe. The first part of that, family and work. So the good news about being a small businessman that's had some success and grown a larger business is that, and being from the flower industry, oftentimes you'll find the florist are family businesses. And the reason for that is it's a crazy business. You have these peaks and valleys and huge demand spikes for the floral holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Valentine's, Easter, Secretary's Week, Mother's Day, Father's Day. So you have these big spikes. And who else can you get to work that hard, that many hours in your family? And, you know, Uncle Joe isn't going to take his personal day from his job at IBM to come deliver flowers for you on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving for just anybody. He's only going to do it for family and because he wants to get invited for Thanksgiving dinner. So that's why so many of my fellow florists are operate family businesses. And no different in our family. My dad was had his own business. He was a painting contractor. My mom worked in, when they were, my parents were alive, my mom worked in our flower business. All of my siblings did, and now nieces and nephews and my own kids. So it was all hands on deck. So I think they learned about work and family commitment. And then when we finally get together for our celebration, so Mother's Day, it might be very late at night on that Sunday or even a week later when we recuperated, we couldn't help it. We talk shop. So I think my kids learned, and my nieces and nephews and certainly siblings learned about business through osmosis. We all did. We were all learning together. And I think that that's a good beneficial thing. And I see the success of my siblings and their families and their kids. And I think a lot of that can be attributed to the fact that we worked in a family business environment where it was a natural subject, a natural course of discussion. And I think a lot of families don't have that benefit of learning about small business, real-time things, because you work in engineering and you come home and you don't really talk that much about work. And so your family isn't learning that aspect. They might learn other things and have wonderful discussions, but now family, oftentimes it was about business and work. But we didn't want, you mentioned the word entitlement, we didn't want our kids to come right into the flower business. So we said, you have to work while you're in school. You can work for us, but you don't have to. But then after you finish school, you cannot work for us for at least 5 years. And what we meant, what we said was, we want you to go work somewhere else. We want you to achieve something else, advanced degree or some success in your employment, before you can even consider applying to come back. And that has, you know, we copied that from other successful families. And that's served us well, Dr. Chloe, because our kids then went off and have other careers. So my daughter, my oldest, we recruited back at one time because she was running the e-commerce business for a very large department store. And not a lot of people had that talent. So when we were looking for someone to work in our e-commerce area, someone said, well, someone would have this kind of resume. My brother gives me the elbow and says, he's describing your daughter, Erin. So we recruited her back. She's now a stay-at-home mom with three kids. And then my son came back about 10 years ago. He lived out west. He lived in the Midwest. He did a couple of startups. And then he started working for one of our companies in Chicago and did very well there. And finally, we approached him and said, geez, do you think you'd like to come back to the New York area and play this role? And so he's the only one of the next generation that's in the business until recently, when my brother Chris's daughter graduated from business school and went to work in a startup, and eventually we recruited Hub back too. So we have two of the next generation working in the business. But the rule is no nepotism. You have to earn your own way. And perhaps we give them, because we're a public company and we have a great governance system and a very talented board of directors, we pay extra scrutiny to make sure they're not getting any undue consideration.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's smart, you know, from so many levels, you know, not that it matters. I'm sure, you know, if I think it's smart, but I just have to say, I do think it's really smart, because I personally have sat with a lot of people that worked for their family business that did not have to jump through the hurdles that you make your family members jump through. And it's harder, believe, you know, for those people, because they personally always have this sense that like other people in the business kind of don't really respect them, or they might even personally not really fully respect themselves, that they have a lot of doubts about, like, would I have this job if it weren't for my family connections? And, you know, moreover, of course, you know, for the sake of the customer to have the benefit of being, you know, being serviced by a company where everybody is fully qualified. But for so many reasons, Jim, I just think that's wonderful that you guys do it the way that you do it. Now I have to keep moving on. I know you said I'm peppering you with questions, but this is my, normally, you know, I'm providing ideas, you know, from as the connectivity counsel. And so this is my chance to ask you some questions. Yes. So here's my next question, Jim. I love your book, by the way. I know you wrote a book and I love it. I got the chance to check it out and I love that it's available on audiobook as well, by the way, because I think sometimes it's so nice to just listen to stories. But I loved hearing your story about the Chinese silk jacket and celebrating mistakes. And I'm wondering if you would please share that story. And if you can tell me and my listeners, how do we know when it's time to pack it in and celebrate the mistake versus when it's time to get out our elbow grease and stick with it a little longer?
Well, there is the question of the ages. And the answer there is, I don't know. But I'll tell you by example, a couple of situations that we've had. If you want to foster a culture of innovation, which my brother and I very much want to do here at Flowers, you have to encourage people to take chances, to take risks. And one of the things that we benefit from as a company is some good fortune and persistent experimentation. So take it all the way back to our earliest days. We've gone through what we would call five waves of our company. First was retail store and stores. Second was acquiring a company that had the 800 telephone number, changing our name of our company to 1-800-Flowers. That was phase two. Phase three, now experimentation. In the 5 years after we acquired that telephone number, with no money, we became a national brand and an innovator. And we changed how our little industry works. And we thought, and my brother Chris had recently graduated from university and came to work with me. And we were chatting about, well, if we could do this with no money and really no business experience, some other technology could come along and innovate us out. And so we were always vigilant, looking for what's the next change technology going to be. And so we were doing lots of experiments with the new technologies. And the one we kept coming back to was this online world, later to be called the internet. So we were very early. And we benefited from being early because people would write about how we're doing things differently. And all of a sudden, we just changed our name from 1-800-Flowers to 1-800-Flowers.com. So the third wave for us was the internet. And then the fourth wave for us was this internet starts to mature and everything's about social and then mobile. And social and mobile aided and abetted each other. So that was a fourth wave. And we're going through the fifth wave right now, which is a maturation of the internet, giving birth to all this social media, mobile access. And commerce went from purely transactional to conversational. And now what we call engagement commerce. We can possibly mimic the relationship we had 40 plus years ago with the 40 customers who made our shop on the Upper East Side of Manhattan really go. I mean, the 40 people who really made the business go. Well, today there's 40 million. And the only way we can mimic those relationships is with effective use of technology. And that technology is the social media tools that are available to us to really look to engage with our customers. So that's the arc of our development as a company. But back to you asking me about the silk jacket. We counted over 50 different experiments in technology alone that we went through while we were still investing in this internet thing in its earliest years. Things like, hey, we print out these catalogs. What if we put it on a CD-ROM and mailed it to customers? Colossal failure. And we had 51 of those, but the 52nd was the internet, which changed our lives. So we tell that story because we want to encourage our young people coming into our company today to be looking to take that next experiment. So the young team that had us be the first thing that you could do on Alexa before you could even buy from Amazon. So we're proud of that. But there were 20 things that we tried that never got any attention. So we try and celebrate trial, not just success. Of course, we scream out loud about our successes. And one of the things we do is talk about our own failures. So back in the 30 years ago, 20 years ago, there were shops popping up. I remember up in Quincy Market, Faneuil Hall, there was a nice, smart entrepreneur named Lucy. And she had two little shops in this Quincy Market. One was Lucy's Have a Heart and Lucy's Rainbow. And every gift item, every tchotchke item in that shop either had a rainbow in Rainbow Shop or heart in the other shop. And so it gave me the idea that maybe we could sell a lot more products as long as it had a flower on it. And I remember we ordered, someone showed me this beautiful silk jacket for a lady. And it had this beautiful embroidered rose on the back of it. And I thought it was going to be a killer item. And we put it in the cover of a catalog and we sent it out to our customers and it bombed. It bombed. So we had one framed and hanging in our office all the time to remind people that this idiot thought it was going to be a great success. It was a bomb. And the moths really enjoyed eating them up in the factory until we finally threw them all out. But the reason we had that hanging in our office was to say to people, mistakes happen. We can make poor judgments. But what we do is acknowledge them, recover quickly, and not just trying to beat our heads against the wall to try and get people to buy the jackets that have no interest in buying. So you have to know when, have to have a judgment about when do you stop and call it a lesson learned and celebrate your failure. And when do you just keep on going? And sometimes that served us well too. I was probably broke. I mean, really broke a half a dozen times in our first 10 years in business.
Wow.
But I didn't lay down. I just was too afraid to fail. So I just kept going. And I've been lucky, Dr. Chloe, to have in my life some great people that I've gotten to know and learn from and just went to for wisdom. And one of them was one of the great entrepreneurs of all time. His name was Wayne Huizinga. And Wayne Huizinga started five different, very different Fortune 500 companies, including Waste Management, Blockbuster Video, Republic Industries, AutoNation. So five different Fortune 500 companies. He started pretty much from scratch. And I got to know Wayne and spend some time with him and hung on his every word. And one of the things he said to me was, Jim, the difference between you and I and most other people we get to meet is that we make at least as many mistakes as everybody else, probably more because we're more active. We're quicker to try things. But the difference between us, and I was so privileged and proud that he was saying us, that I was like him. The difference between them and us is we get over it. We recover quickly. We pick ourselves up. We dust ourselves off and we get on with it. We don't wring our hands and say, oh, that horrible mistake. I'll never make that mistake again. Because we probably will. But it's not about making mistakes. It's learning the lesson and getting on with it and recovering quickly. And those words ring in my head today. So that's, I can't tell you when you should keep on going because we've done that. I can't tell you when you should say, cut your losses and take your lesson and get on with it, because we've done that too. But the key, learn your lesson and get over it. Recover it quickly. Don't let it burden you.
I would agree 100%. You know, one of the things I mentioned in my book is that when people catch themselves lapsing into a bad habit, the first thing they should do is congratulate themselves, you know, on their awareness of it. Because as you said, so many people, they just spiral, you know, into negativity. And I love your vulnerability, Jim. You know, thank you for sharing with us, you know, that you went almost were broke a half a dozen times in the first 10 years. And that there, it's hard to know, you know, when to keep going and when to recognize it as a silk jacket to put in a frame and to celebrate, you know, those mistakes. I love your vulnerability. I know your time.
We all know the phrase of the definition of insanity, and you got to be careful not to do that too.
It's true. We don't want to keep doing the same thing over and over, but we also, you know, don't want to have what psychologists call rejection sensitivity, you know, stop us from, you know, being willing to, you know, keep staying in the game. And as a psychologist, it's something I see people, and I don't always know the answer either, whether it be in business or also frankly in personal relationships, like people who are dating, sometimes they don't know, you know, when to keep trying and when to just move on. But I do have another, you know, final question for you though. And I could ask you questions all day, but I know your time is limited, so I'll limit myself. You know, you mentioned new technology, and of course, new technology is amazing. I know that you're very active on LinkedIn. I love watching you on LinkedIn. I don't see you as much like on Twitter and things like that. And I'm curious, how do you, Jim, choose which platforms of social media you'll be active on? Have you had social, like, did you try Twitter or Instagram? Have you ever tried them and then decided that they weren't for you? Because I'll share with you, you know, personally, and I know for many people these days, we feel like in some ways, social media is a great way to get yourself out there and to network and to see and be seen. It can also be a huge time suck. How do you think about those questions for yourself?
Well, the answer is a point in time situation. So yes, I'm interested in all the social media in terms of the impact they have. You know, the look what's happened in the last 6 to 9 months in terms of Clubhouse, its emergence. It's been, so I'll tap into people I know who know that platform well and how are they using it. So I'm curious and I'll ask a lot of questions. You and I have had this conversation about how you use social media to get your message out. And I just found that for the moment, yes, I've been Facebook. I don't do anything business-wise on. I tend to just keep track of family and friends that way. Twitter, a little bit. I read more than I don't post very often there. But it's an open question. I'm chatting with folks in our shop about should we view that differently. But LinkedIn, because it's a business platform and because it has that natural filter, I feel more comfortable engaging with people there because it's already a preformed sense of community, common set of interest, connectivity there. So and it's been very, very interesting for me because I'm interested in the engagement, not just here's what we think, but then the feedback you get from that. LinkedIn seems to lend itself to that quite effectively. And so you and I have had that conversation, and that's where I'm most comfortable building community, investing in community, and trying to engage with community is primarily on LinkedIn. Although I write a letter every week that we distribute called the Celebrations Pulse that I've shared with our community. So many of the things I've learned from you in the last year and a half, Dr. Chloe, and it's been, I can't help but want to share. So that's why we have the Connectivity Council. Connectivity Council that you're so good to be a part of is three of the most amazing, thoughtful teachers and psychologists that I've had the privilege to get to know during the last year. So you're all three COVID buddies. I really feel close and connected to you and to Dr. Willingham and Dr. Everly. Three amazing, wonderful, talented, sharing, caring people. And every time I interact with you, I want to share that. So I do that in LinkedIn, and I do it with the 7 million subscribers that we have to our Sunday letter. I never try and sell anything to the community, but I celebrate what's going on in the calendar. I talk about what we are feeling, my brother and I, what we're feeling here, what we're going through. And it's just started at the beginning of the pandemic, and it's grown into be something really important to me and to us, because it helps us to move from thinking about these people who do business with us from time to time, not think of them as customers, but think of them as members of a community. And when we do that, it changes the book you taught me, and I've written about it, and I was quite a compliment you weren't meant to hear, and those are the best kind. But at dinner last night, sitting around the table after a serious session of barbecuing, and my son, Matt, who's my youngest, brought up your book. because he was at the house about a month ago, and he saw that I had three or four of your books on my credenza at home in my home office. And he said, is this the book you were talking about? I said, yes. He said, do you mind if I grab a copy? He said, no, that's why they're here. And so then he recommended it to his brother and sister. And so they've all read the book. And we had a little conversation about that last night. But for me, it's all about creating community, investing in that, inviting relationship development. And when we formed this connectivity council, for me, all my kids will tell you that I overwhelm them with a great article I found and shared with them, in this case, your book. And that's what I do with the Celebrations Pulse. When you and I have a conversation and I get some unbelievably good insight on how to handle something or think about something from you, which is often the case, I want to share it with our community. And so that's why I'm always talking about the three of you, because you're so important to me and to us that I'm not done experiencing that unless I share it with someone else.
Wow, Jim, you're such a gift, truly, in so many ways. And I'm so thankful, you know, for what you have shared, as well as, you know, that wonderful compliment, of course, as an author, that makes me so happy.
A single message from your book, I can't let you go without saying it. We talked about it last night at dinner, was about how changing the vocabulary can change the way you think and can change the way you feel and act. And you teaching your community to take what's going to be natural, anxiety, nervous energy, and how to understand it, how to bundle it, how to package it, and how to use it to a positive is a game changer for so many people. And to hear my son recount that for the group at dinner last night as the takeaway lesson he learned, I just have to heap thanks on you.
Jim, you've made my day. You've made my week. Truly, I can't thank you. I can't thank you enough. And I will make sure to drop a sign-up link for the Celebrations Pulse newsletter in the show notes, because I'm sure people, you know, listening may want to know about the Celebrations Pulse and how they can sign up. So, Jim, I won't keep you all day, but I want to thank you so much for your time and for including me in so many different activities. It's been an honor and an opportunity for me in so many ways. And really for Father's Day as well, Jim, you know, you bring a great father energy to so many people, even outside of your family, where you are an actual father. So I want to thank you for that.
Dr. Chloe, it's always a treat to spend time with you. You've been an important influence on my life, and I only look forward to the more ways we'll get to interact in the future. Who knows? We might even meet in person one day.
I know we will. We will. I've been known to make an appearance in New York. So I hear the city's coming back. I'm looking forward to that.
It is indeed. Thank you, Dr. Chloe.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
My goodness, what an incredible conversation. Jim McCann is just one of those people where I often just can't believe that he takes the time to just sit and chat with little old me, but he does. And I'm always thankful for everything he shared. What incredible energy, what incredible insight, what knowledge, what compassion. I hope that you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. And if you have comments, etc., I hope that you'll put them in the comments section. Or if you want to like, comment, certainly subscribe or share this interview or any of the other ones, please know how much I do appreciate it. It helps me a lot in the algorithms when I get interactions. So if you're sitting there, which I hope you are, thinking, wow, that was a great conversation, I enjoyed it, please don't keep it to yourself, whether it be as simple as clicking the like button or subscribe or share or making any kind of a comment at all. It helps me a lot in the algorithms. So please do go ahead and share if you enjoyed it. And thank you for letting me share this with you. These types of conversations are great to have just one-to-one, but the chance to actually share them and not have a conversation in a vacuum, but get the chance to push it out and share it with people like you is really a privilege for me. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a good rest of the day.